Ultimately, the right to health is the right to survive. It's a precondition for all other human rights, as well as a result of the enjoyment of all other human rights. And so taking that rights-based position, what we did was we brought a minority as an indigenous perspective to the right to health. And yes, indeed, as you say, a lot of the issues that come up in our report have to do with the exclusion and discrimination that minorities and indigenous peoples all around the world. A key problem is that governments design health programs without involving minorities and indigenous peoples, without consulting with them, without involving them in the design of these programs. So often these programs are designed without consideration for the traditions, the cultures, the values of minorities and indigenous communities. That's a first key problem. A second key problem is exclusion, that governments do not invest in the infrastructure that is necessary to ensure that minorities and indigenous peoples have access to healthcare. And so what we saw in very many countries was that, for example, a simple thing like the fees that people have to pay to get treatment were too high for members of minorities and indigenous peoples to be able to pay. And also because the distances involved for them to travel to the healthcare centers meant that they had to pay for the transport was another barrier preventing those in need of treatment who belong to minorities and indigenous peoples to get the treatment that they needed. Furthermore, we have a case study looking specifically at maternal health issues, and where we see that many minority women in China do not give birth in hospitals because they perceive that the facilities are of poor quality and culturally insensitive. So what I said about healthcare professionals not understanding local culture and beliefs is highlighted in this case study with regard to China. I think essentially what healthcare professionals need to understand is that there's much of value for them to learn from indigenous and minority communities about the values and traditions that those communities have. Problems with regard to disseminating information about healthcare issues. This is true in China, but it's a problem right around the world. Mm-hmm. So, for example, we found in a number of African countries that HIV/AIDS awareness campaigns were conducted in majority languages, which led to minority or indigenous communities not to know about HIV/AIDS or the prevention of AIDS. That's, well, first of all, there's a fundamental principle in human rights law of self-identification. So it is that whatever the community itself decides to call itself is the key to whether a community sees itself as an indigenous or minority. Ultimately, there's no accepted definition, but basically when we talk about indigenous groups, we're often talking about first peoples. In other words, communities that have been in a certain location and then have been colonized by other groups moving in and taking over their lands. Minorities can be defined by a number of different categories. So, for example, there may be ethnic minorities, but there are also religious and linguistic minorities. So the term minority is a bit broader than indigenous. Last year's thematic chapter, we did write quite a bit about Tibet because it had to do with natural resources and land rights. And we've seen in this report a very clear connection between land loss, displacement, and health outcomes. And this is on a number of different levels. One is that land loss leads to lack of access to traditional medicines. And so, for example, we've been able to get data on Batwa communities in the Great Lakes region, where it's very clear that the Batwa communities that still have access to traditional medicines have better health outcomes than those who have been displaced away from their traditional lands. But land loss also and displacement leads to, of course, increased poverty, and that can lead to that problem of not being able to afford the fees needed to pay for healthcare. And finally, we've seen a very sad trend in the number of countries involving indigenous communities and minority groups, which is that suicide rates have increased on account of minority status, but especially to do with the loss of lands and the loss of hope in a better future that this leads. So there's a mental health aspect to loss of land as well that's worth mentioning. But I think that they are a sign of a people who may be losing hope about their futures. And so there is a mental health aspect related to this trend of self-immolation. We saw in a number of cases, both in Asia and in Latin America, where, for example, with regard to the delivery of babies, that doctors and nurses had a preference for Western models of the delivery of babies. And so, for example, traditions that exist in a number of indigenous communities for maybe women not to be lying down, maybe for mothers to be, to have people around them, that it becomes more of a family thing to give birth, because those traditions were not respected by the healthcare professionals, that expectant mothers felt reticent about turning to hospitals, even if they were at risk of complications. And of course, that cultural barrier entailed that those risks could become more severe if they chose to deliver at home instead.
Mm-hmm. What about in Tibet? What's the what problems do you find?
You'll have to forgive me if we can. If I may just get a moment, and I'll just look up our chapter.
Okay.
If you don't mind.
Oh, no, of course.
One second.
Okay.
I have to admit that we didn't have a section specifically on healthcare issues to do with Tibet as such.
Mm-hmm.
If you look in the report, which is available online,
mm-hmm.
you'll see that what we were reporting on with regard to Tibet had to do with, for example, the self-immolations that have been taking place,
mm-hmm.
And also to do with the environmental degradation that is a big issue right now linked to natural resource extraction in Tibet. However, with regard to China more generally, what we do note is that there is a concern with regard to the fees that people, including minorities and indigenous peoples, need to pay in order to access healthcare, and that there is a discontent with regard to the outpatient costs and inpatient costs that they have to pay, and that even though there have been reforms conducted by the Chinese government, that these reforms have uneven impact because of the discrimination that is prevalent against minorities.
Mm-hmm. And what would be your suggestion to regards to that? The health. I mean, what do they need to do?
Well, I think that there's a fundamental difference whether we're talking maternal health or more broadly, where indigenous communities tend to view health as not just the health of the individual, but also the health of the family and community around the individual, and in fact the health of the environment as well, the physical, natural environment too, mm-hmm. and that all of that is interconnected. And of course, speaking myself as someone who's brought up in a Western medicine tradition, of course we have a lot to learn from that. But more specifically, with regard to maternal health, it's very clear that healthcare professionals have to understand and be willing to accept that women belonging to minority and indigenous communities will want to be able to choose how they wish to deliver their babies, because otherwise women who are at risk of complications will choose to deliver at home, and those risks then, there is clearly a danger that those risks become worse.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And then you also talked about the language, you know, what language they promote health and in some countries, and we know in Tibet there's a big issue of language rights, and that the Tibetans feel the Chinese government is not allowing them to learn their own language and stuff. Did you find any in China like that kind of language issues in terms of that related to health?
Yes, exactly. I think that is part of that issue of cultural appropriateness that. Women hesitate to go to healthcare clinics, and there's also
Yeah, that's really interesting. And I think also in Tibet, there, in terms of access to hospital, I know that a lot of places, they're really far away from hospitals. They don't have local health hospitals. Similar. actually, one more question. I was wondering, when you say minority indigenous, what's the differences between minorities and indigenous?
First of all, there's a fundamental principle in human rights law, mm-hmm. of self-identification, So it is that whatever the community itself decides to call itself is the key to whether a community sees itself as an indigenous or minority. And in fact, especially in Africa, we find that communities will call themselves both indigenous and minority. Mm-hmm. Ultimately, there's no accepted definition, but basically when we talk about indigenous groups, we're often talking about first peoples. In other words, communities that have been in a certain location and then have been colonized by other groups moving in and taking over their lands. Minorities can be defined by a number of different categories. So, for example, there may be ethnic minorities, but there are also religious and linguistic minorities. So the term minority is a bit broader than mm-hmm. indigenous.
Mm-hmm. I see. Okay, Carl, thank you so much. I really appreciate for your time.
May I just raise one further point?
Yeah, oh, definitely, please.
That may be relevant also to Tibet,
yeah.
Which is that... last year's thematic chapter, we did write quite a bit about Tibet because it had to do with natural resources and land rights. And we've seen in this report a very clear connection between land loss, displacement, and health outcomes. And this is on a number of different levels. One is that land loss leads to lack of access to traditional medicines. And so, for example, we've been able to get data on Batwa communities in the Great Lakes region, where it's very clear that the Batwa communities that still have access to traditional medicines mm-hmm. have better health outcomes than those who have been displaced away from their traditional lands. But land loss also and displacement leads to, of course, increased poverty, and that can lead to that problem of not being able to afford the fees needed to pay for healthcare. And finally, we've seen a very sad trend in the number of countries involving indigenous communities and minority groups, which is that suicide rates have increased on account of minority status, but especially to do with the loss of lands and the loss of hope in a better future that this leads. So there's a mental health aspect to loss of land as well that's worth mentioning.
That's really interesting. Yeah, that's definitely worth. And I was wondering if you linked that to, you mentioned about self-immolations. You talked about self-immolations. In what regards did you talk about self-immolations?
Well, we report about the self-immolations trend that we've seen the last few years in Tibet, which is, of course, a very sad and troubling trend. And also we report on the Chinese government's crackdown in relation to these self-immolations. But I think that they are a sign of a people who may be losing hope about their futures. And so there is a mental health aspect related to this trend of self-immolation.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you so much, Carl.
Thank you very
much
for your interest.
I may have to contact you in the future for other stories.
Oh, yeah. No problems. You know where we are.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.